Join the chorus. It's time for another North Melbourne Footy Club update with Dean Vasek and special guests on Hashtag Kangaroos.
Welcome to another episode. My name is Dean Vasek. You can find me on Twitter at Hashtag Kangas or on Instagram at Hashtag Kangaroos Podcast. So today I was once again joined by Ricky Mangides, and we did a deep discussion of how we're going at the moment, which is pretty fucking shit, to be honest with you. But it's good to get his thoughts on how it's all going, where we're falling apart. We even talked about some positives to start with as well. So, it was a very thorough discussion. There was a lot to talk about. Anyways, I won't hold you up anymore. I'll bring on Ricky right now.
All right, so once again, joined by Ricky Mangides. Now, Ricky, before we start, I understand that you've updated your resume because there's going to be about 20 openings in the coming few weeks of the North Melbourne Football Club. Is this true?
Oh, who knows, eh? Who knows? It just depends what Walshy says when he does his review. I'd love to be a fly on the wall as he does his interviews with everyone. That'd be the material he'd get out of those interviews, I would imagine, without knowing anything too much. That'd be enough to fuel a content cycle for about 6 weeks. So,
I mean, who knows? If anyone's left to interview by then, but we'll see how we go. Look, we'll start with the appointment of Jeff Walsh. On a serious note, you've had previous experiences with him. How is he as a person?
Yeah, I think he's really good. When he was head of football in his, what was it, his second stint, I guess, or third stint? He's head of football when I was in the media crew. So I had a few dealings with him. I thought it was great. Like, obviously, you can be very intimidating, very straightforward, very blunt, very to the point. But I think you get people who are like that. I mean, I've dealt with people who are like that, but not productive. So that they basically just, they'll be intimidating, but they won't actually be productive, and you don't actually get anything out of what they're telling you. Like, there were a few times where, like, he wasn't happy with things that I've done, and probably rightfully so, but I never left those conversations thinking, oh, like, what do I do now? I always left them thinking, okay, well, he's not happy at me because I did A, but if I do B, C, and D, that's what fixes it and makes it better. And as far as I know, that hasn't changed since I left, and then since he left, and he's been elsewhere doing all the reviews and things. So I think that's the right type of, mentality and approach that should hold this review in good stead. He'll go in, he'll figure out what the problem is and be like, oh, you need to do A, B, C, and D. And obviously he's got the experience. He knows what to do to turn these things around. And I think he's the right person to really do a comprehensive sort of warts and all review and really get to the bottom of where it's all starting and where to go from here.
Yeah, we kind of need someone like that, don't we, at the moment? Because, it's all falling apart, not just with coaching, but up in the boardroom as well at the moment. So, I'm sure we'll...
I wasn't going to tell the story, but might as well. I'll give you a personal anecdote to explain. For people who remember and used to check out the North website a few years ago, we used to do these articles called NMFC Playbook. So after, I think it was 2014 and 2015, so after wins... because we had access to behind the goals footage, I'd pick out a random passenger play and just explain it. It'd only be pretty basic. It was basically explaining how to use the extra defender when you're allowed to have more than 666 to create an overlap going forward if you want possession. Pretty basic. And then, long story short, while she's like, it went up, and she's like, it's giving away too much of the game plan, like, we don't want that sort of stuff on there, which is, understandable. And he's like, oh, you can't do that. But the conversation didn't end there. It was like, you can't do that. If you want to do this, you have to go, run it past a certain person. They'll give it a tick off. If they don't, they'll tell you what to adjust, what to take out, what you can put in, and then you can keep doing it once it goes through those checks and balances. So, like, a lot of other people, a lot of other administrators, bosses, managers, and all sorts of places around the world, they'll just be like, not happening, full stop. But while she was like, no, you can't do it that way, but if you change it, you can do it this way. And like he was like firm, blunt, right between the eyes. But I left complete clarity on what I had to do. So I think that's the sort of approach, at least in my experience. Maybe he was different with other people, I don't know. But in my experience, that's the sort of approach he'll bring where he'll say, yeah, yes or no, and then give you a solution.
Yeah, well that's really good. Well, thanks for that. It's a fascinating insight. And I doubt he would have been much different to other people. I suppose different characters react differently, so maybe he was. But, it's fascinating to get that in-depth review or something, I suppose, yeah. And like you said, back then there was, you obviously deal with the behind-goals footage as well. So, really good stuff. Thanks for that, Ricky. We'll move forward. We'll talk about the game.
Do we have to?
we'll talk about the first quarter to start with. So that was all right. You wrote in the shinbone.com. You talked about the positives in the game. There was a couple in particular. LDU, particularly that first quarter, was unbelievable. 15 possessions, 236 metres gained, a number of other good things. He probably kept us competitive in the first quarter, to be honest with you. He was carrying us that much. And I thought, and you even mentioned Charlie Lazaro, particularly in the first half in the back line. I thought he was really good. Adjusted with a couple injuries. Kane Turner went down. Aaron Hall within the first minute or two of the game did his quad. And, he got 11 possessions in the second quarter. How did you see their performances?
I think Lazaro and Luke both, it's a shame LDU is doing this, so far off Broadway because he's been so good and developing so well. Obviously, understandably, there's sort of impatience in the air. He wanted to be that sort of, 28, 29 disposal, one and a goal a game, every week. But it's not going to happen, especially in a team that's outmatched as North is right now. But I think I mentioned it in the Shinbone post that it's almost like because of the struggles, Luke's realised he's got to take things on by himself, and he's found a nice balance between doing that, but then also not completely breaking team structures and team rules and doing all that sort of stuff. And I think because he's got that power and that explosiveness and drive offensively that not many other midfielders have at North at the moment. I mean, obviously, in the space of a couple of years, Horn Francis will be at that level. But for the moment, he's going to Luke's the main man, and you play around his strengths and play to his strengths, and the rest of the midfield falls in line. I think Lazaro was, I was surprised he didn't stay half back sort of after half time. But that second quarter was looked like they had nice offensive instincts, and I think in a setup which sort of if the setup had sort of promoted and encouraged those instincts a bit more, that second quarter would have actually been even better because you would have had the support running, you would have had the options further upfield. But so many times he, on instinct, because obviously he hasn't played down at halfback at AFL level too much, on instinct he'd just run, handball receive to get in that right position. He'd look up and just be like, uh-oh, got nothing. And just like you could see the deer in the headlights, like, I've done everything right, got the ball, and I've got nothing to do. I've got nothing to go to now. So, one of those ones where you could see the signs, but it's just, not helped out by the setups.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, LDU is at it's a bit of a shame that we've been so poor because his last couple months of football has been as good as anyone in a competition, really, when you think about it. And he's taken his game to a whole new level. It'd probably be leading our best and fairest, to be honest with you, based on his last couple of months. Yeah, Charlie Lazaro, like you said, I was a bit surprised they didn't keep him halfback, particularly, like you said, he was trying to, give us that overlap a bit and create. And then in the second half, they put him forward. I mean, I think
he gets a rest and get frostbite.
Exactly. He got two possessions in the second half. He couldn't do much. Like Phoenix Spicer played forward and, he's probably got hypothermia, to be honest with you, because I think he had two touches, but the ball's nowhere near him for the whole game. So,
Thing with Lazaro is that, makes you appreciate Aaron Hall even more because he sees the same things that Lazaro did. But he has that experience and can still make chicken salad out of chicken. Well, you know what. So it just makes you appreciate how Hawk can sort of see that sort of stuff and still make still get a bit going for North offensively.
Well, Aaron Hall had three possessions and lasted 1 minute of the game. So if he played the whole game based on that stat, he would have ended up with about, 360 touches. So, it was a bit of a shame. He did do his quite early. And,
record's gone, by the way, so.
Yeah, unfortunately, and it's, it looks like he's the only one in that back half that seems to get freedom to, run and create. Because I don't know. Is that how you see it as well?
Yeah, it is. Whether it's, it's hard to say without knowing specific player instructions, whether that's by design or just matchups. Like, I mean, you saw glimpses of Bailey Scott doing it, obviously before he got injured a week and a half ago. It's just hard to know, but it does give you that vibe for sure.
Did you like Stevenson's game in the back half? His stats showing up all right.
Yeah, I mean, he had stats. I mean, the ball was down there, permanently. So
he had his
chance to get stats. It's just, just in the general bigger picture, it's hard to judge those flair players because the setups aren't set up in a way for them to show off their skills and their run and carry. So, I mean, that's not to excuse the players completely, obviously, because, it's not as if it's a, top eight list or a top 10 list that's being pulled down to this level. I mean, they're absolutely not flawless and blameless. It's just really hard to judge those players because they have no chance to show off their skills and their skill set with the way the team's being set up. So.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I don't think it's we could talk about individual players and some of them being out of form, and Stevenson's one of them that's been in and out of the team a fair bit this year. But at the end of the day, I think, like you said, it's pretty much the setup and the way we're playing at the moment, which we're going to get to. Let's talk about the game then. We'll start with the first quarter, and obviously only 4 points down. We kicked last three goals of the quarter, and we kicked the goal at the siren. Zerha kicked one. Probably a little bit of a lucky free kick to give us a bit of momentum going into quarter time. How did you see the start? And why were we, I suppose, competitive in the first quarter?
The way I interpret it, it was basically, I mean, the whole game was played on Geelong's terms, and that first quarter sort of sat a little bit further back, thinking that North would take the game on a little bit. There was actually a lot of similarities where I looked at it compared to Good Friday last year against the Bulldogs, with that, like, everything was sort of short, and just sort of bring it out really methodically and slowly and try to get it up past, half-back wing. And that first quarter, Geelong sat back expecting us to take a bit more ground with our disposals. And then at quarter time, when they realised, well, actually, it's not going to happen. Let's push up. Let's squeeze them. And then we had no answers because it was the way we were set up to play, much like the Bulldogs game in Good Friday last year. And there's just no way to move the ball. And that went, there wasn't any adjustments. There's a bit of mixed messaging that I think Lee Montagna pointed out pretty well on Fox Footy on, I think, Sunday night on first crack. Once Geelong realised that North weren't taking any ground with their disposals, they could makes it much easier for them to defend because they're defending a shorter portion of the field. And there's just no room to move. And that's how you get, 13 inside 50s after quarter time or something like that. So,
I've got the stats in front of me. So after quarter time, I'll do the first quarter. So inside 50s, Geelong 16 and North Melbourne 12, down by 4 points. And after quarter time, 18-13, 131 to North Melbourne 2-113. Inside 50s, 58 to North Melbourne 13. We had, I think, 12 possessions inside 50 for the whole game. Yeah. And our pressure rating was higher than Geelong's. So obviously, like was stated, it's a method, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the efforts there, I mean, even that Giants game was a few weeks ago at Marvel when it was, what was it, like 8 or 9 goals at halftime. You can't fault the effort. Like, the players aren't checked out or anything like that. And, I mean, it'd be human nature if they were checked out at this stage, let's be honest. It's just method. I mean, I mean, I guess you can say, what was it, 13 possessions in the, or 12 possessions in the forward half for 7 scoring shots. I think that's pretty efficient, isn't it?
That's pretty good, yeah.
Pretty efficient, yeah. So, yeah, if you have 100 possessions in the forward half, you can have 80 odd scoring shots. My maths. Yeah.
Well, I wish it worked like that.
Yeah. For anyone listening, I am taking the piss with that. But just to be sure. But I just think it's method that is really cooling any North efforts right now.
Do you see that as our biggest problem at the moment? It's just there's no method at all. There's no system. There's no no method, like you said. Do you think that's pretty much it?
I mean, I probably wouldn't say there's no method, because I mean, as far as I can see, there is a method. It's just my gripe is that it's not a method which stands up to pressure in the AFL in 2022. You've got to take possession either quickly out of your back half or take territory, and then you can you set up sort of outside of your defensive 50. So you don't want to give teams the ability to squeeze in and constrict them in their 450. So obviously there's a lot of problems overall. That's the point where it'd be probably unfair to single any one thing out. If I alter that question a little bit to make it the biggest fixable problem, I'd say it's the way they're being set up to play. Other things will take time, and you can't rush them, like getting games into players, bringing all the talent in, developing players through the VFL. That's going to take time, and you can't fast track that or rush it. Or just get extra size on players, all that sort of stuff. But I mean, if you look back at that first quarter against Gold Coast, where it was actually a concerted effort to put forward half pressure on, take territory a little bit quicker. And you could see it was like night and day. It was like a different team in that first quarter against Gold Coast compared to, 85% of the quarters this season. That's gone.
Yeah.
I think I had 15 entries for the quarter, that first quarter. And then, I mean, obviously it fell apart after that, but it wasn't due to the forward half stuff. So, I think the biggest fixable problem, biggest short-term fixable problem is the way they're being set up to play. Other things will take time, but... yeah, I just would like to see a lot more emphasis on taking territory and trying to get the ball locked in the forward half, because I don't think there's been enough of that this year.
Yeah, 100%. Like you mentioned Lee Montagna. I did hear that message. Just explain to the listeners what that message was, because I'm pretty sure it was, I can't remember exactly, and I won't quote it exactly, but halftime, David Noble pretty much said, we want to maintain possession, with short passes. And at the end of the game, he sort of said, no, we didn't adjust and we didn't go long when we had to. Is that what you pretty much read between the lines with that?
Yeah. So before the start of the third quarter, Cam Mooney talked to Noble. And then so Noble said we didn't his quotes were, we felt we didn't own the ball enough in that second quarter when we had possession. We probably went for too much on our kicks. I mean, I don't particularly agree with that, but regardless, our uncontested marks and control in the first quarter were really good. So we'll try to go back to that this quarter, meaning third quarter. And then sort of post-game in the all-in press conference, got asked about it. And then Noble said, we were just talking to the players about how to adjust the game. As the game moves, we've got to adjust to that. So 32 uncontested marks for us in the first quarter, managed the game well. Geelong adjust and we don't adjust. So therefore, you don't turn it into a bit more of a territory battle on a slippery night. So that's, you're telling one thing to one person, another thing to another person. So halftime, you're saying we need to go back to owning the ball. And then post-game, you're saying we didn't adjust to going longer. So it's like, well, what's, like, which part are you supposed to believe,
yeah, I'm confused already, so.
Yeah.
You can only imagine the players would have been too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I think that's part of being a coach. We can look at the stats and all that sort of stuff, but in game, you just have to give the players the simplest possible message, because they're, they've got a million and one things to try and figure out on the run. And as a coach's job is to simplify it and make their job as easy as possible. And those sorts of messages don't. So, to be blunt,
Yeah, no, it's exactly right. Where does this, we might as well go to it, where does this leave David Noble? Because I don't think there's any way back from this, you'd have to think. Is the coaching the main problem or part of the overall problem? There's obviously underlying issues elsewhere. Or do you think if we replace a coach, things will be fixed?
I think it's part of an overall problem. I mean, I guess this is going to sound a bit holier than thou, but my personal code, I guess, or moral code, I guess, I'm never going to be, I'd never want to be a person who comes out and says so-and-so should lose their job unless they've done actual, real life heinous things. So like if a coach loses his job, there's collateral damage, which means a lot of other people lose their jobs. And so for me to sit in the cheap seats with a secure job and lob a, get rid of him, it turns people's careers and lives and families into a game and into sort of just a figure. And I don't want to be that person. But I mean, to me, I think it comes down to a pretty simple question for, Walshy and the power brokers. I think like the setups and structures, they're not AFL standard at the moment. Like, can this current coaching group turn it around or not? Like, we've seen elsewhere at different clubs, like Hardwick went through a review and Buckley went through a review and a bunch of others. I think Stuart Drew went through one last year or the year before, and they've turned it around and they've improved their coaches and as coaches. Can the North ones do the same? From the outside, I don't know. I don't know their personalities, and but the answer to that is that's what drives the club forward, I think.
Yeah, 100%. Look, it doesn't look good. When you lost 10-plus goals on average, and you've been just as uncompetitive as, GWS in their first season and Fitzroy in their last season of AFL football, then, at the end of the day, it's a results-based industry. And if he was a English Premier League manager going through this, there'd be supporters jumping from rooftops to try and get him.
If we were playing in the Premier League, we'd have had three managers already this year.
100%. Yeah, exactly. So like you said, you don't wish on anyone to lose their job or anything like that. But sometimes things just don't work out. Lots of other coaches have sort of lost their jobs. Pretty much every coach loses their job somehow. So, 99 times out of 100, you're probably not going to go out on your own terms. So, that's just the nature of the business, unfortunately. I was critical of the strength and conditioning team pretty much straight after Aaron Hall did his quad 2 minutes in the game. Now, we've had a number of soft tissue injuries this year. Aiden Bonner's done a couple now. A number of others, I think Cameron Zerha, Ben Cunnington did his calf. And then we had that weird set scenario with Jacob Edwards. We've got to ramp up his conditioning for 3 weeks before he gets back out there and plays. Now, to me, that's negligence. Like, I don't know how a guy halfway through the season sort of said, no, he's not fit enough. Like, what's the preseason for then?
Yeah, that's I thought about this for a bit. I mean, to be honest, I genuinely have no idea what is good, what is bad in that sort of space. I mean, I guess the extent of my S&C knowledge is just knowing I have to stretch for ages before I play indoor cricket. That's about the extent of why. I mean, I don't know how to approach things or like what's good indicators, what's bad indicators, like how much of there was a calf complaint. Like, how much of that is just because he's actually training now for the first time in however long? Any opinion of mine, I'd just be guessing. It'd be pretty, uninformed or informed or whatever the prefix is to that word. But I just don't know. The whole setup changed last year, and I think by the little glimpses of data you get from the AFL trackers, does seem like we're covering more ground this year. How much of that is because we never have the ball? I don't know.
it's probably a large part of it, I would say.
I wouldn't have a clue. I'd just be guessing whether things are going well or not well in that respect. So it's a lot of words to say, not a lot, but that's all right at the moment.
Yeah, sitting on a fence there, Ricky. So, blocking it straight back to the bowler. So, I'm not too sure what the recovery is like if they're doing ice baths or going to the beach on a Sunday, straight after a game or anything like that. Because, I'm more critical about soft tissue injuries. I don't know what the load management is. Maybe, like you said, they're covering too much ground. And, it's because they've never got the ball, so they're running around. And maybe, stop starting. That's probably why they're doing a lot of soft tissue injuries. Because every week we seem to lose we seem to lose. You know, we get back in two, but we lose three. So, you know, through an injury like Aiden Bonner, you know, just did his thigh or something like that again. So, yeah, and Aaron Hall's had three soft tissue injuries this year now. So, you know, it's almost getting to the stage where he's injury prone, to be honest with you. So,
yeah. I mean, also it's a tricky one with Bonner because, I mean, he's been injury prone basically since day one. So it's like, well, yes, I mean, like you see someone like Taylor Garner who's just injury, like some players' bodies, like they just can't stand up to AFL, I guess, expectations. Like, how, like, and it's like from the outside, it's so hard to judge, like, how much of that is just like Bonner's body and how much of it is like S&C. And if you went to, you know, Brisbane's S&C team, which seemed to work miracles, everyone that goes up there, would he magically be able to play? It's really hard to know from the outside.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Danner has, you know, found continuity in his body this year, the last couple of years since he's gone up there. So, you know, yeah, I'm not too sure if that's saying something about Essendon and how they did a recovery program, but, you know.
Maybe.
Yeah, I hope so.
We've even got the magic hands. We'll just send everyone up there and we'll, maybe we can try to poach their team. I don't know.
Well, we've got David Noble for them, so maybe we'll just keep a lid on getting Brisbane people down. So, yeah, we'll see how we go with that. Look, I don't know, because I think Mark Hello mentioned that David Noble didn't bring his own strength and conditioning team in this year. So, yeah, like you said, they're all brand new. So I'm not too sure, what the story is with that. So we'll see how we go. Anyway, it's probably least of our problems at the moment, to be honest. it's a problem, but, it's, you know, the fact that it's not a high priority is saying something, to be honest with you. So
yep.
I want to talk to you about our list. Now, is it as bad as what we're playing? Or clearly, I think we're just underachieving. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, it's not, no one's saying that, they should have been making finals this year or like that would have been, I mean, anyone who thinks that is a bit unrealistic, but I think where it's at is that it's underachieving from a relatively low base to begin with. So it's almost like, the saying, if you don't expect anything, you can't be disappointed. Well, if you don't expect anything and then you still get disappointed, that's where North is now. So, I mean, I think like we mentioned it before, like there's like your outside players and your flair players, they just have no avenues to use their skills. And that's why the ball use is so static. It's so so slow and it just doesn't take ground. And that's why you get, 25 inside 50s on Saturday, I think can't be averaging much more than mid-30s for the whole year without having the numbers in front of me. So I think, when you're underachieving from a low base, that's when you get where you are.
Yeah, in saying all that, should we get a priority pick as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think there's any discussion to be had or any question about it, in my mind anyway. I mean, there'll be the usual type of, self-interested waffle from prominent parties, and you'll get other clubs, presidents and list managers leaking out so friendly journos and being like, self-inflicted and, they don't deserve it because they bought it on themselves. I mean, when did a priority pick ever go to a team that was being run well,
Well, that's true. Melbourne used it three times, and Hawthorn was used it when Clarkson first came in, and so forth. So and the AFL wouldn't like this that a team's struggling this bad at the moment. They pride themselves on even competition. So
Well, I mean, as we sit here, like if my math is correct, North had from their last 52 matches 6 wins and a draw. If I know how to do basic math, I might be off slightly of one or two.
No, that sounds about right. Yeah.
If that's not, let's say they, 7 games left, takes you to 59 games in the last, just under 3 years. Let's say there's one more win in the last 7 games. So you got seven and a half wins out of 59 games. Like if that's not worthy of a priority pick, then I don't think anything in the history of the footy is.
Exactly right. I mean, in saying all that, I don't think we'll win another game this year, do you?
Yeah, not the way things are going. No. Maybe. No. I think the option, well, their only potential chance is maybe if Cunners comes back for one of the last couple of games and it's at home and you've got the feel-good factor. So, but if things go the way they currently are, with the way they're being asked to play,
I can't see it. Like, we've got Collingwood this week. Do you expect like the result last week? It didn't surprise me. Yeah, you're disappointed with another, with a 112 point loss. But if someone told me at the start of the game that you're going to lose this game by 112 points, you could sort of see it. And this week, it wouldn't surprise me if it's something up to that figure as well against Collingwood, who run and right, run six in a row. And I don't know if the coach has got any adjustments or any magic tricks up his sleeve to make it any different. Do you see anything different happening this Saturday?
I mean, I hope so.
Oh, we hope. Do you believe it?
The track record doesn't fill me with a lot of confidence. Nothing over the last however many weeks seems to sort of indicate that there is room for a change, or room for a game plan that sort of takes a bit more territory. And Collingwood defend really high, sort of reminiscent of you're sort of looking at sort of early 2017 Richmond, how high they get up the field. And that's just, the perfect way to defend against North and the ball use that has happened in the last few weeks or all year, let's be honest. So their defensive method is perfectly set up to stop North. It's not like if teams sit off, you can sort of steal a bit of a march on them. But I mean, that's not what Collingwood do as a team rule. So it's going to be an interesting day at the MCG.
Interesting is probably an interesting way to put it, to be honest with you. So no pun intended. So you're obviously in the camp of keeping Ben McKay forward this week then.
No. He's got to go back. I think we tried it and it didn't work. So, but then again, with the caveat that you could almost have Harry and McKernan down there and it wouldn't matter with the way they're being asked to play. So, close to being not mattering, not fully, if Ori or Wayne are listening. it just doesn't matter who you play up there. You're going to move the ball like that, so you might as well stick him back where his best position is and where he can be a very, very good defender.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. He obviously went there halfway through the third quarter, but he looked like he got a bit of fresh body. He was a bit cold. I was a bit worried he's going to do a soft tissue injury. Because he was obviously gone from running 0 kilometres to all of a sudden have to, run big kilometres in the back line because he was chasing Tom Hawkins all over the park. In saying all that, if he goes back, who would you put forward? Now, there's been a lot of talk about Callum Coleman-Jones. I think we're a bit scarred after that first round. Mm-hmm. Is it time to give it another chance, like playing Sherry, Goldstein and Callum Coleman-Jones all on the same team, but just keeping Callum Coleman-Jones as a full forward?
If it comes with clear instructions and a change in ball use, I think it's worth a shot. But if it's anything like the round one ball use against Hawthorn, or I guess the ball use of the last sort of six to... I shouldn't say ball use. I should say offensive setups. That's probably a better catch-all term.
Yeah.
Because ball use makes it kind of sound a little bit like sort of directly on the players, when that's not entirely true. If there's a bit more speed on the ball, a bit more run and carry on the ball, I think it can work. But not to get too depressing and circle back to the same point. But if it's the same offensive setups as it was the last few weeks, I'd play four tom, or you can play five smalls.
I remember you did tweet that. Yeah. No,
it just doesn't matter. So, I mean, I think any move has to be backed up with a foundation of we need to update our offensive setups so we can actually threaten the defence.
Yeah, we've got a couple of injuries this week. Kane Turner, probably concussion, and Aaron Hall's going to come out of the team. If Taron Thomas, is probably available, he gets picked. Jason on Francis is obviously back. I think he gets automatically picked. Would you be tempted, like, we're not getting run and carried, would you be tempted to just put him on the halfback flank?
Oh, I definitely put Thomas on the halfback flank for sure. I don't see why not.
Just to get that run and carry, like, just get that overlap run, players that can take the game on a bit. And especially, like you said, Collingwood are going to got that high setup that are going to put that offensive press on, or defensive press, whatever, however you want to word it. So is it worth trying to get those players that create in the back 50, and that way we can get the ball moving forward?
Yeah, I'd be all for it. I would imagine after Lazaro would be given the full game back there, after what he did in the second quarter. I could be completely off, but if I was putting two and two together, that's sort of the way I'm looking at it. But yeah, I absolutely think, and give it, especially Thomas, just give him the freedom to go. Like, just watch Aaron Hall's tapes all week. Like, we want you to do something like that. Yeah, like, take the game on. Like, if you make a mistake, it's fine. Like, it's one of those ones where you'd almost be more angry at him if he made a mistake just being static. You know, if you make a mistake and you're caught holding the ball, trying to run and carry, that's fine. Be okay with that. Just take the game on and try and push.
And I think as fans would accept that. You know, we'd be happy. You know, if you're taking a game on, you make a mistake, whether you kick it into the opposition or whatever, you get run down, you sort of accept that because you're trying to do something proactive rather than actually reactive.
As long as he's sort of running and he's got something to go to and support running and targets ahead of the ball, absolutely. You can't stick him out there and just say run and not give him any further instructions, because then you might as well just run into a brick wall. Has the same sort of impact. But I absolutely think it can work if it's if he's got some support running alongside him and targets ahead of the ball.
That's exactly right. And because Darcy Moore, he might play this week, but if he's out, I'm not too sure who the other tool is that's capable of playing that role. I mean, Jeremy Howe's a very good intercept player, but you can stretch him if you run and carry and get Callum Collins-Jones, one out, inside the 50, might give us a bit more opportunity to score. Now, David Noble said Jason Lawn Francis might have to come back through the twos. Is that serious, or do you feel like he might be coming back through the twos?
In a year where I've been staggered on a number of occasions, that him going through the VFL would be the most staggering point of the year. I just think that was a post game sort of lack of, I guess, clarity, and emotions are so high immediately after a game. I just think it was a slip of the tongue. I'd be monumentally stunned and think of any sort of adjectives and descriptive words that you want to sort of place in there. I don't believe for a second he'd come from the VFL.
We don't want to cause more disgruntlement amongst players and so forth. If he wants to keep his job for a couple more weeks, then he might want to seriously reconsider that. So, we'll see. So, obviously, we're getting flogged by every week. As supporters, have we got any hope for the rest of the season? Or do we just, keep expecting floggings every week?
I think soon I'll be sort of switching focus to, you sort of look at the team setups first, and then that's same old, just look at individual players and see what they're providing, and you sort of look at the future, and it's like, well, that skill set, where could that be best placed to help the team, it's like, for example, like Lazaro last week, you look at the way he's running and carrying and being able to cover the ground really well, and you think, well, like, that sort of skill set and that ability to cover ground is really well suited to a wing, especially that open side winger with the way you have to get up and back repeatedly. Like those sorts of little breadcrumbs you get. Yeah. I think that's where the hope part of it comes in for me. I mean, I'd like to think by this stage I've established I'm not sort of the doom and gloom 100% of the time person trying to find the positives wherever they come. That's where I'm looking at, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think Paul Curtis has been a real shining light as well.
Forward.
And I thought Phoenix Spicer showed a little bit, like his ability to put defensive pressure on defenders was okay on the weekend. Like he was you know, because he's quite quick, you know, as opposed to Jack Marnie, who's a bit slower. I thought he was able to put defenders under pressure. He only got two touches himself, but, you know, then he kicked two behinds, I think. So it could have been a very, you know, efficient game if he kicked straight. But I thought there was something there with him. So I think he plays again this week. So we'll see how we go. Anyways, Ricky, did you want to add anything else?
Oh, just the usual shinboner.com plug. Got a nice post coming tomorrow morning with about, so it's very detailed and lots of charts and in-depth league-wide look at sorting the total minutes played and breaking that down by age to sort of see where teams stand out compared to the rest of the competition. So, for example, North has the second highest percentage of total minutes played by guys 22 years old and under.
Okay.
Collingwood actually has the second most percentage of minutes played by guys 29 years old and older. So that runs a bit counter to the narrative in the mainstream media of Collingwood being young. But there's quite a few little interesting tidbits. So that's dropping tomorrow morning. And you go patreon.com/ashinboner to subscribe if you'd like to see it first.
Yeah, I mean, and you do your usual plug because it's the start of the month. You get pretty much the next 3 or 4 weeks free before you get the first payment come out. And there's different tiers which you can look at on your theshinbone.com as well. There's ones as low as $2.50 and, you know, ones that go to $10. It's still a small donation and helps out someone local as well that supports the club. So definitely recommend getting behind that. And he obviously does game reviews. He puts a lot of work into it, Ricky, so definitely get behind that. Now, just one more before we head off. Now, I checked on Twitter earlier today and there was talk that we want to look at an experienced player like a Luke Hodge type at the end of the season. Any players, like there's obviously mentioned of Scott Pendlebury would be a good one for us. Any players that or any player that you could think of that would be good for that role?
The slam dunk of a joke was saying Robbie Tarrant, which I got some cheap
Twitter. Yeah, I did say that.
That was too easy to pass up. I was going to go, I looked at him like, do I say Ben Brown? I'm like, no, I'll go Robbie Tarrant.
Nice.
Sean Higgins. I actually think, either like pie in the sky, you know, who knows if it's even realistic or not, but I think Shannon Hearn would be a good one.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah, that's not a bad one, actually. Captain of the club as well.
Yeah, whether his body's up to it, whether he would even want to live in Melbourne for a year. I mean, that's all, you know, in the realm of fantasy land, but purely from the outside with no sort of inside info of what he's like as a personality. I think he'd be the one I'd pick. I think that halfback sort of role is a good one to get your veterans into.
Yeah, we tried it with Jack Zeeble, but he's gone back up forward this year. So, obviously that's probably it for him as a halfback or rebound defender. You'd have to think he might be playing the rest of his career as a forward. So, I'm not so sure, but it looks that way at the moment. Anyways, Ricky, I won't hold you up anymore. You've been very generous with your time. I appreciate it. And thanks very much for coming on the show once again.
Always, always a fun time. We'll do it again soon.
So thank you once again to Ricky for coming on the show and giving his thoughts on how we're going as a club at the moment. That's it for this episode. I will be back later in the week. I'm hoping to be back later in the week, probably around Thursday night once the teams are announced. Try and do another episode after that and talk a little bit about a game preview coming up against Collingwood. I did do a little one with Ricky, but I'll probably do another one later in the week as well. Thanks to all you lovely listeners who keep retweeting the show. Patrick Allwood in particular, he's very good at that. All you people that like as well, I really appreciate it. Comment on the show, it's really good. And thanks for coming in on my feed as well and just commenting on, whether I put up a post, whether it's on Twitter or on Instagram. I'm happy to get your feedback on that as well and any ways that I can improve the show. I've had a couple really good suggestions from you lovely listeners previous weeks about things that I can work on, and I'm always up for criticism or constructive criticism that will help grow the show. There was one person who mentioned that I was talking saying yes a lot while other people were talking and so forth, pretty much saying yes after every sentence. But yeah, and that's good feedback because I didn't realize I was doing it, so I'm trying to work on that. I'm always looking to, for ways to get better in that regard. So yeah, well, who was that? That was Footy Focus Podcast. So check out their podcast as well. Give them a follow. They're two blokes that talk about North Melbourne and Port Adelaide mainly, but they still talk about all the big issues in football. And there's a lot of big issues going on at North Melbourne Football Club, so definitely give them a listen. I believe they do one every week. So, you know, I've listened to a few of their episodes. It's really good. So, you know, give them a follow. You know, happy to support anyone as well. If you want a promo of anything, just let me know. I'm not looking for sponsors or anything like that. I'm not looking for, you know, money or anything like that to promote the show. I'm happy to do this on my own time. Who knows what the future will hold with that. So, yeah, I don't know if I'll make a career out of this, but, yeah, just really happy to keep this going and talk about the North Melbourne Football Club to you lovely listeners. Even though it's hard for us all, we're all sticking together, and that's all we can do. You know, the train has come off the tracks, you know, at the moment, but, yeah, we just got to rebuild and put them back on the tracks somehow, and we'll get there because, you know, there is a bit of, not much direction going on, not much leadership going on at the club, but yeah, look, at the moment, all we can do as supporters is just stick thick, and you know, the good times will eventually come. I still put out the prediction, and I still think, and call me stupid, that we will play finals in 2024, whether it's under this coach, which you probably have to think not, or another coach. I think this list is a lot better than what we're showing. So yeah, hold me to it. And you can call me a dickhead or call me a fool, but I think 2024 will be the year that this club will start playing finals and we'll start getting some sustained success after that. Anyways, that's it. Like I said, you know, I appreciate everything all you love listeners are doing to help out the show, telling your friends, retweeting and likes and all that sort of thing. So, yeah, I'll see you later in the week. And I will leave a shout-out to Tim Harrington. Bye for now.